Coming up on NHL Fantasy on Ice, analysis of each series, players to watch, and trends to know. The Bruins and Avs need a response, while the Canes push the Islanders to the brink. Plus, Nick Alberga pops on the line to give his DFS advice and share his early Conn Smythe candidates. It's NHL Fantasy on Ice.
Welcome back to NHL Fantasy on Ice here on this Thursday morning. Pete Jensen here with you talking Stanley Cup playoffs, fantasy implications as we move forward here in the second round of the playoffs. So Robbie Reese is out of town. Dave Satriano back on his way to San Jose. So we're bringing in the third line center. He's more like a first liner though to me. Nick Alberga, Sirius XM, NHL Network radio host. Nick, how you doing today, man?
Pete, I'm fantastic. I feel like I'm Scott Foster, the accountant, who sat behind the bench for one game for the Chicago Blackhawks. But my pleasure being with you today.
Yeah, emergency goalie in to save the day. So, yeah, Nick Alberga, you can follow him on Twitter, at the Golden Muzzy. Also does great work for Sportsnet, covering fantasy for them during the season. So, Islanders, I mean, both of us picked them. I was looking at your picks. I mean, we both picked this team. They swept Pittsburgh out of the first round. What has happened to this team, man? I mean, they're on the verge of getting swept themselves here in round two against a team that is really coming along well beyond its years in the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah, it really is crazy that, 11 days ago, the Carolina Hurricanes were on the brink of elimination, and somehow they've come back from the dead and now up 3-0 in the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's sort of funny, Pete, like I said it before, the Stanley Cup playoffs, that I'll just put this out there, the fact that Carolina, every time they make the Stanley Cup playoffs, they seem to do something in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I believe they had five berths before this one, as the Carolina Hurricanes won as Hartford, and it seemed like they just, every time they went to the big dance, they seemed to do something significant. Again, we're starting to see that. I feel like they've taken on the DNA of their head coach, Rod Brind'Amour, and the tenacity they played with, and ultimately, I feel like the Islanders, their Stanley Cup was beating Pittsburgh in the first round, and I really did wonder. I know I did pick the Islanders in this series. I wondered, how the layoff would stand for the New York Islanders, and B, how they would adapt to playing a team that's also in the underdog role like them, and clearly it hasn't been great. I wondered about the depth as well for the Islanders going into this series. They played a physical brand that was successful against the Pittsburgh Penguins, but the way the Carolina Hurricanes were rolling going into this series, I felt it would be different. My question for you, I mean, if you're the New York Islanders and Barry Trotz, do you have to go to Thomas Greiss in game four is my wonder here.
It's funny because I had a hard stance on that entering yesterday, but clearly the third goal allowed. And the thing about this series is that I saw it's been tied for 70% of the series. So it's been extremely competitive, even though the Islanders have lost the first three games. But you have to consider, right, when you come back from 3-0 down to win a series, it's only happened four times. There has to be some kind of spark. Right now, the Islanders don't have any significant injuries and a guy that's going to return. So really, when you look at how Greiss has been almost identical statistically to Robin Leonard this season and the mistake that Leonard made to cost him late in game three, I think you'd be kind of, you wouldn't be putting your best foot forward if you don't turn to Thomas Greiss now, just because how efficient he was in the regular season, how good he was against the Carolina Hurricanes this season and in his career. So, I mean, am I crazy for flip-flopping in a matter of 12 hours? Is this crazy?
No, I think you're totally right. You nailed it. You need a spark because, again, when you look at this Islanders team, goal scoring was not their MO all season long. It was their strong defensive structure. And I think, quite frankly, it's come down to execution. You're totally right. Like, I would argue the Islanders have probably been the better team in this series, but unfortunately, posts don't matter. I mean, that means the goalie's playing their angle, and maybe the luck is a bit on your side. And I think when you look at the big boys of the Carolina Hurricanes, they've been just that much better than the New York Islanders. Like, Matthew Barzal has been much better here in round two, but still not good enough in my books. Jordan Eberle's a guy who was outstanding in the first round against Pittsburgh, barely noticed him. You know, you can go up and down a list. Josh Bailey scores in game three in Carolina on Wednesday. Brock Nelson's on a contract here. Beauvilly is the guy who's had his ups and downs so far in his NHL career. I think it's going to come down to execution. If the Islanders are going to start some hope in this series, I think you're totally right. You got to go to Thomas Greiss just to get that spark to get that enthusiasm, get something going in terms of momentum in the series for the Islanders.
This also goes way beyond just the goaltending for the Islanders, right? The secondary scoring has disappeared. Brock Nelson, who scored a couple of big road goals in round one against Pittsburgh, has been non-existent. I mean, he played pretty well yesterday, but not seeing, not reaping the benefits in terms of the score sheet. Jordan Eberle as well, I mean, hasn't scored a goal in the series. Anders Lee was involved in a screen that led to a power play goal early in game three, but hasn't scored a goal himself in this series. Do you see any one of those three guys, all potential UFAs at the end of the year, do you think that they have a glimmer of hope, or do you think this is just like a group failure here at this point in the series?
I think it always has to be classified as a group failure. They better have a hope, or they're going to be finished quickly in four games here by the Carolina Hurricanes on Friday night. But certainly a theme for me I've picked out in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and I hashtagged this on Wednesday, was coaching matters. I really have liked the chess match, and I know we'll get to the Dallas-St. Louis series later on. But I think it's time for Barry Trotz maybe to throw his lines in a blender and try something new, because, you know, while the luck hasn't been there for the New York Islanders, you need that spark. And that's the buzzword of this conversation that comes to mind when we're talking about Carolina and the New York Islanders. Justin Williams, I don't know who else could have scored that big-time goal. I mean, that's an unbelievable story, again, for his age to do what he does. And it was only game three. I think for the Islanders, you need that spark. I don't care who it is. I don't care if it's Barzal, Eberle, Beauvillier. Heck, it could even be that fourth line for all that matters. And that's why I do think Barry Trotz should throw the lines into the blender and see where you can come from that, because they need the momentum right now. Clearly, you need a hot start in game four or you are finito. And they have to take it one game at a time, that's for sure. They're going to use every cliche in the world. I do feel like all the pressure is still, quite frankly, on the New York Islanders, even though they're down 3-0 in the series. How do you feel about that?
I think that third period, man, that was one of their worst periods of the season. They had, even late in the game, they had a line that has not been doing very much this series out there in big moments. The Martin, Cizikas, Clutterbuck, I didn't really understand that, but yeah, this Carolina team has, it's amazing that they've been able to keep this thing going, even with the injury to Peter Mrazek, where you look at 35-year-old Curtis McIlhenny stepping in for game two, getting the win again, and home ice. It was a great atmosphere. So this is kind of, do you think this is a situation where Carolina sticks with McIlhenny and plays it safe with Mrazek, unless this series maybe gets a little interesting?
Yeah, I really wondered this after watching that game last night, because it's quite clear to me, like, Mrazek's the number one guy, but certainly I think you have the luxury of being up 3-0 in a series. I think you have to go back with the veteran Curtis McIlhenny, became the oldest guy to make his first start in the Stanley Cup playoffs on Wednesday night. I thought he was good, not great. That's more times, more often, what you're going to see from Curtis McIlhenny. I do think if there is one team who would love to sweep, but I know you don't want to look ahead, it's probably Carolina to lick their wounds. It's just surreal how many injuries that team is dealing with, and it was great to get some guys back, guys like Svechnikov with that ugly visor and all, to come back, and Martinuk as well. They're still really, really banged up, but certainly I think you want to look at that aspect and say, you have to go to McIlhenny, do you not?
I think so, and it's amazing too when you look at Carolina. They haven't even needed to rush back Andrei Svechnikov. I mean, he finally came back after what, a 6-game absence, but they have clearly a higher ceiling if he gets going. I mean, it's pretty crazy. He's a 20-goal scorer, playing mostly on the second or third line, came back, had two shots on goal in about 12 minutes, also hit a post, really good chance there for the rookie. So do you think that Carolina, I mean, assuming they get through the Islanders here in 4, 5, or 6 games, I think is realistic, do you think that this team has a real chance of winning the Stanley Cup? I mean, it's just something that we never really could wrap our minds around, because it didn't seem very possible.
Yeah, to quote Justin Bieber back in the day, never say never in that song. Like, it's been one of those Stanley Cup playoffs, and yes, I did just quote Justin Bieber, but it's just been one of those Stanley Cup playoffs where it's like, expect the unexpected, and that's the great thing about this game. And while on paper Carolina maybe doesn't stack up to the remaining teams, they're showing us here something in the second round that they're really, you know, executing and scoring those big time goals and playing that brand of hockey we've seen all season long. And it's sort of amazing to me that, you know, I was there on that Saturday night when Don Cherry had his famous, infamous quotes, bunch of jerks, and the way the rallying they've been rallying behind that quote and that moniker and what Don Cherry said about them to where they are now with the towels and the shirts and the lettering in the stands. It really had been and has been a galvanizing moment for this team. Now, we'll see when push comes to shove. But again, as history has shown us, when it comes to the Carolina Hurricanes, they don't usually make the Stanley Cup playoffs. But when they do, they're really, really successful in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And if I remember before, those times they went to the playoffs, nobody expected them to do much. And then they went all the way or they went to the conference finals. So it'll be, you know, something noteworthy to see what happens. But again, I think anybody has that ability to do something here in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's more so because we've really, none of this has been really expected, has it?
No, it hasn't been expected. And another thing before we move on to the next series, yeah. Jacob Slavin, this guy leads the NHL in assists this postseason. He had another two last night. I mean, this guy's come out of nowhere. He's been a great stay-at-home, all-around defenseman. For his career, his young career, but this has been something that both of us have covered fantasy all year. Did you ever expect anything like this from Slavin?
Well, I think these guys in general have been trending upwards. Again, they got another injury on their back end there. Trevor Van Riemsdyk got hurt earlier on in the series. And, you know, I was wondering about this the other night, what this does for the trade value. Because I think, again, this has been prognosticated for a couple of years now, is that Carolina likely will trade a defenseman at some point in time for a top six forward. And I do feel like they still should do that. But I think you look at Brett Pesce, he's played outstanding. Dougie Hamilton's played fantastic in the second half of the season. I think you nailed it on Slavin. He's been a tower of power. And Justin Falk has been, quite frankly, Justin Falk. And this only helps Don Waddell, the GM, try to coordinate something in the offseason because you never want to be content with your roster. I know they're playing really, really well right now, but I think they would internally love another top six center or a top six forward in general. So I'm not that shocked on Slavin. We do see a lot of defensemen have their coming out parties in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I think as a whole, their back end has really, really impressed me. How many times have we talked on paper how strong this Canes decor is? And now to see it in living color in person when it matters most, that's been the most impressive thing to me.
And that play last night by Justin Falk really shows how much offensive ability this team has, from Slavin to Hamilton, who's been a top goal scorer in recent years for whoever he's played for. And then Justin Falk, healthy, in good shape, and finishing that great pass from Warren Fogle. So Carolina was an underdog against the Washington Capitals in the first round. It's pretty amazing that they could potentially meet in the conference final, the Columbus Blue Jackets. The Blue Jackets got a 2-1 series lead against the Boston Bruins. I mean, what has been the biggest reason, you think, for Columbus to be able to get this series lead? You think it's Bobrovsky? I mean, he's, to me, the biggest reason why they're up 2-1 in this series. Boston's had a million quality chances, and he's been the better goalie out of the two.
You're not wrong. And, you know, that's the biggest story for me, is that right now I would suggest that if Columbus went all the way, Sergei Bobrovsky is going to be your Conn Smythe Trophy winner. And then you start to mull over what type of numbers he's going to get in UFA. I mean, this is your classic goalie in a contract. You're really ramping things up in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Not to mention, we already knew he's one of the best goalies in the world. I think he had his turbulent times, and understandably so, in the regular season. You know, to me, it comes down to a couple things. Columbus's power play, for how pitiful that had been in the regular season the last couple of years, I understand bringing in Matt Duchene is going to help Ryan Dzingel's play more of a secondary role, and that's fair in bringing up. But they're 8-21 here in the Stanley Cup playoffs, 3-7, Pete, in the last two games. Like, it makes no sense. They played the number one team in Tampa, who had the number one PK in the NHL, and Boston's no team to slouch on either, defensively speaking and in special teams wise. And they've really, really won that battle. I feel like that's why they're up 2-1 in this series. And another aspect I'll look at is the Marchand Bergeron Pasternak line, who had 20 points. And those three have been split up for the most part. I understand that. But they had 20 points in the first round against the Maple Leafs, just one here through three games against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Now, I think it's fair to bring up last year why this team lost in the second round in five games to Tampa. The same thing happened. So you start to wonder about their depth guys. We'll likely see DeBrus Krejci and David Backes. Remember him. He's going to come back to this lineup, it sounds like, for the Boston Bruins, and he gets paid a lot of money. So it's time to show up and do something. But again, Columbus, and Pete, maybe you can chime in here. Columbus is a team that I just feel has got that pixie dust They got things going at the right time. It took them a while, and yeah, they almost ran out of racetrack late in the season to find that chemistry after all the movement at the deadline. But they're a scary team on paper, and right now the way Bobrovsky is playing and they're getting the secondary offense, like I thought their third and fourth lines have been outstanding so far here in the playoffs. They're going to be a tough out, whether it be by Boston or somebody else at this point in time.
The more I watch Columbus, no doubt, I think they're going to win the whole thing this year. You mentioned that added motivation of the contracts. Tortorella's having fun. Matt Duchesne's producing better than a point per game. Panarin's been dynamite with a great, just a great mentality, just a ultimate confidence mentality. And you mentioned the power play of Columbus. I mean, they have a new power play one. It's Seth Jones, Panarin, Duchesne, the two free agents. Nick Foligno, who is a really key player, I think, when the Blue Jackets have been playing their best hockey over the past few years. Nick Foligno is usually involved. And then Cam Atkinson, perennial 30 goal scorer. So all of a sudden, like you said, the team that was bottom five in the league in power play percentage this year and the past few years, all of a sudden tops in the NHL, and it's a huge reason as well. I mean, I was talking about Bobrovsky being the biggest reason, but this power play resurgence has been a marvel to watch.
It's funny how everybody's shocked too. Like, you look at those names on paper. Cam Atkinson had an incredible year again. Pierre-Luc Dubois is, I mean, already a bona fide center. I know he's young, but Panarin's going to get paid big time. He's as clutch as they come. I'm with you on Nick Foligno. I love the leadership this guy brings. You don't always have to notice him by his offense, but some of the intangibles he does, you can't teach, and that's why clearly he's a captain. I've loved the compete level of Matt Duchesne in this series. I've already noted a couple times at least, especially in the two game-winning goals for him, that he's out-battled the trees in front of the net of the Boston Bruins on the power play. That says a lot, not only for me as a casual fan, but I'm sure as executives watching and trying to diligently think, should we pay Matt Duchesne the big-time money, the long-term money? And to see him out-battle Zdeno Chara a couple times goes a long way for me. And I just love his compete level. And then, you know, the intangibles that a line mate like Josh Anderson brings to the table as well. I feel like John Tortorella has found the right ingredient now. You know, clearly there's going to be some scrutiny in this series. I do expect a bit of a bounce back here from the Boston Bruins. I think watching Boston the way I have quite frequently a lot the last couple of years, never count that team out. And I was going to ask you, in terms of DFS, I think you got to lay the heavy on the Boston Bruins tonight, don't you?
I was thinking about it. I mean, I was looking at, so David Krejci's pretty affordable. He has points in seven of his past eight games very quietly, even though DeBrusk hasn't been crazy involved. But I was contemplating, because there's so little variety to choose from, and I feel like not many people will be touching Patrice Bergeron tonight, but this is a guy that I think if he goes a 5-6-7 game series without a 3 or 4 point night, I would be really surprised. And Boston's been really good at answering the bell every chance they've absolutely needed to. I thought they maybe should have lost that Leaf series, but their resolve was really impressive. I could see Bergeron having a huge game in game four to just flip the script in this series and put it right back into Boston's favor. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they're in Toronto's head. That's why they won that series. But certainly, you know, that's my major storyline I'm looking at here. They were put back together, Marchand, Bergeron, and Pasternak. It's time to do something. And I think if there were a game to do something, it's probably game four here. And again, there is pedigree up and down this roster, right? They've done it before. They got a couple legends on their team, in my opinion, already. Especially on the back end, also up front for all the antics. Brad Marchand is an excellent hockey player, and he relishes moments like this. You know, I really felt like what contributed to that action back in game three, the punch to the back of the head with Scott Harrington, was a guy who's just a little annoyed. He's really not getting his way at this point in time. And this line has had the luxury of just, you know, competing and competing and producing and producing. And when they're not, that's the way, you know, a guy like Brad Marchand will act. And I think you're totally right. You know, you could either stack up on the Bergeron, Pasternak, or Marchand line if you're looking for, you know, sort of some guys under the radar who are not going to cost as much. I think, you know, you'll laugh, but David Backes is somebody I've identified in potential DFS look tonight, just more so because he's not going to be expensive. And then he's got the revenge of coming back from a healthy scratch, like four games in a row. And the guy's a, you know, a veteran. He's a pro. And seems like every time he comes back from that, he chips in at least a point. So I think all eyes could be on the Bergeron line, but maybe we're undervaluing the look of the DeBrusk, Krejci, Backes line. But I do feel like Boston's going to have their best foot forward tonight. They need to. I think you're done. If you're down 3-1, And I understand in the first round they did this against the Maple Leafs. They were down 2-1 in that series and battled their way back to win game 4 and 5. I think just the confidence Columbus is playing with, I think Boston better instill their brand of hockey soon, or they're going to be in trouble, much similar to what we saw from Tampa in the first round, Pete.
So for the goaltending matchup tonight, just for game 4, Tuukka Rask, is he the pick? I think that as good as Bobrovsky's been, he has like a .928 save percentage here in the playoffs, Tuukka Rask. He hasn't been the big reason for some of these flaws that have been exposed for Boston. I've been really impressed by Rask, especially in that Game 7 a couple of days ago.
Yeah, you're totally right. Like, you know, I think when you expect Boston to fail, it's more likely defensively, but that really has not been the case. I just think Columbus has sort of beat them at their own game. We saw a bit of an enhanced style from Boston, understandably so, in their first round matchup against Toronto. But Columbus loves to play that battered and bruised, checking type game, the physical nature. And I think we're starting to see that more and more. That's sort of Boston's game, too. That's why I've been shocked that they've benched or taken a guy like Chris Wagner out of the lineup. I feel like Bruce Cassidy's trying to do a bit too much in this series. And I think when push comes to shove, I would go with Tuukka Rask. I just think Boston's bounce back ability, we've seen it time and time, and I do expect a much better game from the big boys of the Boston Bruins. They need it right now, Pete.
They certainly do. We'll see if the top dogs of Boston, Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, and David Pastrnak, can finally return value in DFS against Sergei Bobrovsky, who's been really a Conn Smythe candidate. And one of the other top Conn Smythe candidates right now has to be Logan Couture. If we look out west to what's going on in that series, MacKinnon has been great as well. But what Couture just did in Game 3 to put the stranglehold really on Colorado for the time being was so impressive. This guy's been as good as anybody over the past few years in the playoffs.
He has, and that's the amazing part. Like, if I were to tell you a couple days ago, and maybe you would know, but you know, the casual fan probably wouldn't know that Logan Couture has been incredible in the Stanley Cup playoffs. What does he have? The second most goals since 2010. I was reading at 43, Ovechkin at 50. Like, this guy's real clutch, and I like the fact that he sort of called himself out and his line and then produced. And that was my wonder. Like, I feel like Colorado, you know, it's too early to say, but are they resorting back to a one-line team? I know they have been getting some depth scoring guys like Colin Wilson. I think the jury is still out for me on guys like Tyson Jost. But I think San Jose is a team, Pete, on paper that I still really, really like. I actually had Vegas winning in the first round. We all know how it turned out in Game 7, but they have the ability with those three defensemen on the back end. They're going to go as far as those guys play. And right now they're playing really, really well. Joe Pavelski still not in this lineup. But again, what that Couture line did, might it open it up a bit for a game 4 breakout for Evander Kane or Hurdle Lucas Radil, who's playing on that second line, is my wonder. I took Colorado in this series, but I can see it going San Jose too, man. Like, that team is so strong, and you know, it's been understandable why the conversation going into the season was about San Jose. They got banged up near the end. They were struggling near the end. They found their groove, I think, in the first round. And I don't know about you, the biggest ingredient, as you know, in the Stanley Cup playoffs is goaltending. And I feel like Martin Jones is really, really locked in right now.
Jones has definitely righted a lot of the wrongs that plagued him during the regular season. I think even without Pavelski, this team is much deeper than Colorado. As long as they keep their foot on the pedal, they can really take a huge lead in this series and ultimately win it, I think, with games 5 and 7 being at home. So if they let Colorado sneak back into this thing, Colorado had a lot of turnovers in game 3. I think they just have to be strong defensively from the back end out, and then they're pretty much unbeatable against Colorado. But I think that in DFS, not just Logan Couture, you have to look at his line mates with Gustav Nyquist, Timo Meier. Timo Meier, I was looking at his numbers since the game 5 when the Sharks were facing elimination. He has points in 5 of 6 games. He's got 24 shots in 6 games. So he's been lighting it up. He finally got on the board in terms of a big multi-point game with 3 points in game 3. Is this a line that you think you have to tap into, even just to get exposure to Couture at this point, hitting into one of these two line mates?
Yeah, definitely. And Pete, as you know, as we always preach in the fantasy hockey world, contract years never overlook them. Timo Meier is going to be an RFA this summer. Gustav Nyquist is going to be UFA. So clearly these guys want to go out on a bang. And right now, the way they're playing, that would, you know, allude to that factor. Again, I think the easy money would be Alon Couture, but don't overlook that second line. I think Colorado's game plan is going to be structured around Couture, understandably so. I mean, he's the biggest piece up front right now for San Jose, especially with Joe Pavelski, who also is in a contract year, dinged up, won't play here, I would think, in game four of this series tonight. So I think you can find some value as well in Kane, Hurdle, and Radil, or even, you know, to an extent, the third line with Thornton and Sorensen and what, you know, chemistry they've built. I think normally in the DFS world, it's, you know, it's easy to look at a brand and easy to look at a previous game and say, hey, Logan Couture had a hat trick. But Pete, what I also expect here in this game is sort of a bounce back from the coaching staff of the opposite side and Jared Bednar. Like, I think their game plan is going to be heavily structured to try and shut down the matchup game. I think you're going to see a lot of McKinnon this time against Couture's line again. And I do feel like it could open up space for the secondary components of San Jose. How do you feel?
I think they still have that matchup advantage. I think that the top line could have a lot of people were stacking the big four or, you know, two or three of them for Colorado in game three, came up empty. Remember to have a short memory this time of year. I think these guys could light it up, all have multi-point games in game four, and just kind of like what Dallas did, remind you how resilient they are, how high scoring they can be when they have the momentum, when they have the matchup advantages, and when they have their top guns producing at the right time of year. For Colorado, though, their defensemen have come along here. I mean, between Cale Makar and Sam Girard, they're playing on the same pair. They combine on an assist on Matt Nieto's tying goal in game three. Are those guys that you, because if we're spending up here in DFS this time of year, you need some cheap options, especially on defense maybe. So are you looking at maybe rostering one of those two guys? Have you liked what you've seen from Girard and Makar playing together?
How could you not? You know, I did some DFS the other night and I wanted the same thing. Like, you need some cheap options back there, and certainly I would have a sniff at that. I mean, even if you think Colorado's not going to win game four, I think the likelihood of getting offense is more likely in this series than any other series. I talked about it ad nauseum going into this series. It could be an offensive series, and so far it really truly has been, at least compared to the other ones, for sure. You know, I think what we're seeing stardom in front of our eyes, especially when it comes to Cale Makar. You know, this guy's played a limited amount of games in the NHL, and the poise and savvy and patience he's playing with already is simply incredible. And they have the luxury in Colorado, and I think they have the speed up front to complement what they have on the back end in terms of, what, three puck-moving defensemen, and Tyson Barry, Samuel Girard, and Cale Makar. So you have to play to your strengths. I think that's another thing to look for. Is Colorado trying to push, you know, the pace a bit, utilize those defensemen because they can move the puck so quickly and because they're so quick and smart offensively, and, you know, move it up front to guys like Landeskog, McKinnon, Kerfoot, Rantanen on the second line right now, and we'll see how they switch it up, because I do think Jared Bednard does have the tendency, similar to Jim Montgomery in Dallas, to go back to his big guns, and understandably so. But I think you can find some sneaky value with Makar or Samuel Girard, because the onus, I'm sure, from the San Jose perspective, might own in on a guy like Tyson Barry, who's had an exceptional second half of the season. He's also eligible for a new contract, what, on July 1, so there's no shock there in the way he's been producing on the back end. But I got to ask you this, too. We were mulling this over the other night. You think Colorado is the most structured or well-placed team going into the offseason, just because what they have and what they have coming? It really is incredible.
Yeah, they have a number four pick in the draft. They're going to have Makar for a full season. Girard's very young. Their top line is as good as anybody's in the league, so no doubt Colorado is very, very strong here and now, and also for the years to come. Another team that I was looking at that I think could, once they reach their full ceiling, could be an elite team for many years to come, is the Dallas Stars. And they showed us a glimmer of that again on Wednesday night in game four, tying the series against the St. Louis Blues. And they did some switcheroos with their line combinations, and it paid off largely. How about those line combos?
Yeah, it did. I love the coaching aspect of this series. Craig Berube and Jim Montgomery have gone, you know, toe-to-toe. I think clearly we saw in game three, Craig Berube, like he did in the first round against Winnipeg, shuffles it up in the top nine, goes with Schwartz on the top line, Sundqvist the center line two, Perron the veteran on line three, and it had major benefits and a huge factor in the game three victory. Now, we move forward to game four. Jim Montgomery pulls out his tools as well, goes Dickinson, Seguin, Zuccarello, great value on that line right now, and Ben Hinson, Radulov. And I don't know about you, but I think that the biggest factor for Dallas that is quite frankly being overlooked because he got hurt in the first game back, you know, when he was traded from the Rangers, was the Matt Zuccarello factor. I honestly feel like acquiring him has opened up the door for so many different looks. And I like the fact it's great to see him back and healthy. And I think it just adds a different dynamic. How did you feel about the move at the time, and how do you feel about it now?
I love the move at the time. I love the way he plays, even as a standalone when he plays on the second line. But when you look at him, when he gets exposure to Ben or Seguin, like he played with Seguin in game number four, had two assists. He has six assists in four games in the series, and that was one of the biggest X factors for me entering the series. Last round, he had three goals in six games, no assists. I was saying, this guy, when he plays his best hockey and makes the biggest impact on his team, it's what we loved when we saw what he did with the Rangers before the trade deadline, right around the All-Star game leading up to the deadline. When he is an elite distributor, he can wreak havoc on the opposition. I think he's done that here, and he's helped Dallas climb their way back into the series.
Yeah, he's sneaky good. Like, he had a lot of moments with the New York Rangers. He was beloved by the fans, by the organization. And again, you know, people are not giving Jim Neal enough credit for going out there and making that acquisition. Now, I get he gets hurt again in game one, but he's healthy here in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I just think it adds that extra dynamic that's needed in the Stanley Cup playoffs, especially for Dallas when you know that line, or that team, excuse me, in general is very top line heavy. Again, we're continuing to see the coming out party of Roope Hintz. I thought he was exceptional again in game four of this series, and now we get down to a best of three. Do you get this narrative that Dallas has tapped into St. Louis psychologically? Like, you know, we saw Binnington lose his cool. I don't buy that. I think it's a media-driven storyline, and I just envision this series still going seven games. I think it's a really, really close series, Pete.
I think that it is something to consider here for the remainder of the series with Jordan Binnington, who looked stone cold killer for his whole career to this point, to see him not only get into it with Jamie Benn, but then go over and kind of slash Ben Bishop at center ice. It was before leaving for the end of the period. It was a little ridiculous. And it was something that, I mean, I look at game three of this series, St. Louis, really their resolve in that game was unbelievable because Dallas came on so strong multiple times. I think that this St. Louis is in a little bit of a bind right now. I know they have two of the next three at home, but I am a little concerned about how things escalated in game four.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I think it's going to go back and forth of who's going to execute. I think depth wise, St. Louis has to have the advantage. When you have the luxury of having an Alex Steen on your fourth line, a Robbie Fabry on your fourth line, I think you have to give that team the advantage. But I think at this point in time, heading into a game five, it's now time to put up or shut up. Tarasenko's been good in this series. O'Reilly's been good the last couple games. You need more to Braden Schenn, the Sundqvist line. It's easy to make those demands right now, but again, I want to see what the response is from Greg Berube, because we've seen this all season long that he seems to structure a game plan very, very well after a loss. And I'm sure you've already told your DFS community as well that Ben Bishop is the guy to own following a loss in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So he got his in game four. I do expect a response by Jordan Binnington and St. Louis in game five of this series. I do think St. Louis is the better team in this series. I like their depth, and I still have questions about Dallas. Like, the future looks bright. Miro Heiskanen's an unbelievable product on the top end. He's still raw. I think they're trending upwards more so when you look at St. Louis. I think their time could be now to win something significant. I could see this team going all the way to the Stanley Cup final. And I'm going to continue to ride with St. Louis. Who'd you take in this series?
Yeah, we both took St. Louis. I really like what I've seen from them. I think they had one of the best extended stretches of strong play of any team in the league. That was why I liked Boston. It was why I liked St. Louis to go to the Final Four. So I still have some faith in St. Louis. One thing that's concerning, though, I saw Ryan O'Reilly's been dominated in the faceoff circle. That doesn't happen very often.
I know.
Against Tyler Seguin. And I wonder if St. Louis will make a line change here. I know we've seen Schwartz been put on the top line. Perron's been there for a little bit. Of course, when they stack that line, it's dangerous. And then another guy, Robert Thomas, the rookie that not many people are talking about. He's had a really strong past couple of games, points in each of the past two, scored a goal in game four. You think maybe they could incorporate him into the top six for game five?
Definitely, and that's the one thing we have seen and we saw late in the season was Robert Thomas and Craig Berube gaining more and more confidence with this youngster. And certainly I could see a switch of maybe Perron to the third line with Bozak and Maroon, the all veteran line, if you will, and Thomas moving up there. I could see Bozak moving up to a second line center role. I don't think they're gonna mess with that top line too much. Maybe there's a possibility Schwartz goes back to line two. They go back with Shen, O'Reilly, and Tarasenko. But I do feel like this time of year comes down to coaching more times than any other point, because at this point, you know what you're facing. They both play in the Central Division. They play a lot. And again, you can see it for most series right now, Pete. It comes down to execution, and we'll see how much they have left. But you're totally right in the face-off game. Like, Ryan O'Reilly's been known for how good he is two-way and winning the face-off, especially. I looked at him always as a junior Patrice Bergeron, but he's really, really been handled in this series in the face-off circle, which is kind of stunning, if you ask me.
Sometimes these matchups can turn the tide in a series, so we'll see if O'Reilly and the Blues can respond in game five on home ice. Hey, Nick, thanks so much for joining us here today. I appreciate you sticking on for the whole show. Great stuff as always. You can follow Nick at the Golden Muzzy on Twitter and hit him and me up with any last minute questions before tonight. So Nick, once again, thanks for joining us.
Pete, thanks so much for having me. I apologize to all for my cracked voice. I am dealing with the flu of the century. It continues on. And it's always a pleasure to come on with you guys. I love this podcast, and I love the work you guys do over at NHL.com. Thanks so much.
We appreciate it, man. Nick Alberga, check out his work on Sportsnet, SiriusXM, NHL Network Radio. That'll do it for this episode of NHL Fantasy on Ice. Check out the other podcasts in our network, by the way. NHL Executive Suite, NHL Draft Class with Adam Kimmelman and Mike Morial. And we'll talk to you all again next week. Enjoy the weekend in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Thanks so much for listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice.